Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. In this edition of Radio Curious, my guest is Sam Farr, the member of the United States House of Representatives whose district includes Monterey and Santa Cruz counties. We've talked with Sam a number of times before, and in this edition, we'll talk about what's going on in Congress these days just before the Democratic National Convention. This interview was recorded by phone with Congressman Farr from his home in Washington, D.C. on Monday, July 12, 2004. Sam Farr, welcome to Radio Curious.
Thank you very much, Barry Vogel. It's a delight to be on your program.
So tell us what's going on in Congress now. Last week, the defeat of Congressman Bernie Sanders' attempt to restrict the Patriot Act so that librarians don't have to say who borrowed what. And coming up is the constitutional amendment concerning marriage. Just a few of the high points. What's the sense? What do you feel?
Well, everything that's going on in Congress is really about the November election and what you see on a day-to-day basis of the votes being taken and the bills being passed is that really is all about the elections, either to deliver for your constituency or your special interest before the election so you can get kudos, or to put people's political careers on the line by making them cast tough votes that are very unpopular with some segments of their community. And those two are exactly for that reason. Those votes were cast not for merit, but for political purposes.
Well, I understand how the Marriage Act would, because of some people's religious beliefs, but how about the Patriot Act, where what you read can be determined or be found out by the FBI?
Well, if you look at the Bush campaign for re-election, it's really trying to rally around the fear of terrorism caused by the incidents of 9/11, and the reason his popularity went up right after that. Nobody's ever changed presidencies in the middle of a war. So his invasion of Iraq creates the war, which he's now trying to justify and scare people enough to remind them that terrorism is still on the forefront. And so these votes are really votes about the Patriot Act, which was implemented to try to fight terrorism. And it got out of the Judiciary Committee, essentially adopting everything that Clinton had suggested. And the Republicans were very accommodating to the Democrats, so that when the vote was taken of the draft, it passed unanimously. The most extreme entities on the committee, both left and right, voted for it.
And now what you're talking about is what was adopted in October of 2001, right after the September 11th attacks.
Well, it wasn't a die. It was passed out of Judiciary Committee, which writes the bill. Then it went to the Rules Committee, and over the weekend, John Ashcroft and his gang got into working with the Republican majority and rewrote the bill, which we know is the Patriot Act right now. It went to the House floor, and remember, the House floor was looking back at the week before, and they said, my God, this thing passed unanimously. Whatever adjustments they made couldn't be that bad. And you had actually a lot of very progressive members vote for it, thinking that it was still a pretty good bill. Myself and others just realized that, boy, what you write overnight, you don't have a chance to read, and the quick synopsis really raised enough questions where we said, this is high risk, maybe no gain, and voted against it. And thank God we did, because it's become a very unpopular act. Now, what Bernie Sanders did last week was to try to take one of the most onerous provisions and take it out of the bill, essentially not requiring libraries and bookstores and entities which deal with selling you information in books and so on, that if the FBI would like to know what you are up to, they're required to report. And nobody likes this idea, and most communities have said they're going to refuse to comply. Bernie Sanders tried to make that unpopularity pass with an amendment, and because the Republicans were still ranging about Homeland Security and terrorism, They were able to, the votes actually passed, but the roll hadn't been announced, and so they kept the roll open like they did with the prescription drug bill, and went around and as we say, broke arm, you could hear the arms breaking, and they were able to peel off Republicans so that in the end there was a tie vote, and a tie vote loses. That was all about getting votes on the record for the November election, and the same thing with the marriage constitutional amendment. I mean,
well, let's wait a minute. Let's Sam, let's talk about getting votes on the record for the election. From what you see from your colleagues in Congress, there's a sense of people who would like to have the Patriot Act in the form that what you read can be reported and what books you purchase can be discerned by the FBI?
Well, your vote wouldn't be forecast or used that way. It would be used that you were weak on terrorism, that you wouldn't allow the government authorities to go after terrorists, and it would never be exactly spelled out. I mean, campaigns use a lot of misinformation and disinformation in order to win their point. You've heard the old adage that the end justifies the means, and the end here is to get Republicans elected and get the president reelected, and therefore the means, if you want to distort the truth, is that's okay in campaigns. And, I mean, it's not just the Republicans that do that. The Democrats have done that also. I mean, but in a time when you're using that issue that could be very a very close issue in a lot of congressional districts, you scare members into having to cast votes that are very unpopular. And they're doing the same thing with the marriage issue. I mean, the most conservative people in this country have said don't pass a constitutional amendment to do that. They don't like gay marriages, but they want to leave the issue up to states. The issue of getting married right now is a state's issue. The states determine who can perform marriages and who can't, and the states don't do anything about how churches. I mean, the issue here is, remember, no religious organization is ever going to be told what they need to do to perform a marriage, because that will be left up to the religious organizations to determine, as they always have been. What this deals with is whether you can allow civil marriages to be conducted for same-sex marriages, or whether in California, for example, as a member of Congress, I'm authorized to perform a marriage. Now, I'm not, because of the law in California, I'm not authorized to perform a same-sex marriage. But this is where the debate at the federal level is. It will keep it at the state level. Let the states deal with this. And I think we know that the votes aren't there in the Senate to pass a constitutional amendment. It takes a two-thirds vote. So this is an exercise in just essentially putting some senators from very conservative states, Democrats who are up for re-election, on the line in those states, and giving what we call a wedge issue to their campaign, to the opposition, and these are things that are this is all we're doing in Washington right now, is sort of a gotcha process.
And the gotcha process, or the wedge issue process, has to do with keeping a majority of one party or the other in the House or the Senate.
Yeah, I think when we learned government politics, and we learned that there is a House of Representatives and a Senate, and that they make laws, to the most sophisticated people in this country, think that everybody comes back here well-meaning, just dedicated to do things, and once in a while we just sort of have partisan differences. I mean, this is totally a partisan town. The majority owns the town. And when you have the majority that's in the White House, the majority that's in the House, and the majority in the Senate, you essentially have kind of a dictatorial political process. Yes, there's checks and balances, but they're very weak.
And as you've pointed out in the past, this is the first time since 1952 that one party has had control of the two houses and the White House.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Clinton had it in his first 2 years, and essentially I think the Democrats in the House and the Senate, which were the old guard, kind of abused it and didn't allow Clinton to come in with some progressive legislation, which I think would have helped save the Democrats in the 92 election, but 94 election. But anyway, the Republicans are now in charge of this town, and that's why the media doesn't cover the Democrats. You can't get a room reserved in the United States Capitol by a member of Congress unless you have the permission of the Republican leadership. I mean, there's essentially no party. They chair all the committees. They decide what bills are going to be heard, what witnesses are going to be called, what the votes are going to be taken, how long the votes are going to be taken, when they're going to be taken, what issue they're going to take them on. I mean, this is what's going to happen if you have if you elect a new, hopefully we elect John Kerry president, but if John Kerry gets elected president and he has to look down Pennsylvania Avenue to the eyes of Tom DeLay, who are going to be running his legislative program, you're going to have a very contentious 4 years, because Tom DeLay is not going to let John Kerry have one day of success as long as the Republicans can control the House. So what you're seeing now is the setup for this whole big showdown at the OK Corral, and that showdown is Election Day.
Sam, who is Tom DeLay? What role does he have?
Tom DeLay is the majority leader of the Congress. He's the Republican leader. Denny Hassert is the Speaker of the House, and as Speaker, he's elected by the Republicans to be Speaker, and he's responsible for running the day-to-day operations of the House of Representatives for both parties. Tom DeLay is head of the Republican Party in Congress, sets the entire agenda for Congress, controls essentially what we do every day, and his desire is to be Speaker. He's a very, very powerful politician. He's probably the most effective fundraiser. He's a neocon conservative, and he has, I mean, he used to be a pesticide, what do you call it, a pest control officer. He he called himself the exterminator when he was in private life, and he's used that philosophy in Congress, and he's not a friend of anything that's progressive or I think essentially sort of Californian in the sense of not a friend of the environment, not a friend of social issues, not a friend of education, not a friend of anything that we'd agree with.
And he's a congressman from Texas.
Very powerful congressman from Texas.
So he's the person who you refer to when you say that the Democrats don't have a choice of what bills come forward or what room they can meet in to have a Democratic caucus.
Well, remember the old adage when we were in school learning about government that the president proposes and Congress disposes? It means the president has to come and ask for every penny that the government is going to spend, has to ask for law that he can be authorized to spend the money or carry out a program. And so what if you have a president of one party and a Congress of another party, essentially the response from after he proposes we're not accepting any of your ideas. We're going to do it our way.
Congressman Sam Farr is the representative from Santa Cruz County and Monterey County, and he's our guest today on this edition of Radio Curious. You're listening to Radio Curious, and I'm Barry Vogel. Sam, you're going to be going to the Democratic National Convention in a couple of weeks in Boston. What do you anticipate will happen?
Well, we're all kind of looking forward to that. We obviously, there's not any surprises. We know who the candidate will be. Who will be nominated. We know who the vice president will be, and I think it's essentially the big launching pad for the Kerry Edwards campaign, and that will be a lot of unity and excitement about that. Otherwise, I think it's going to be rather a bland election. This election is about defeating the incumbency, and a lot of attention will be spent on that. And those who pay attention to conventions will be most likely looking for the unity factor, and I think it's an opportunity for Kerry to sell himself to those who have not yet are convinced that he ought to be the next president. I see a lot of people out there who are not in favor of Bush, but not necessarily ready to vote for Kerry. And, I mean, there is no, what I tell people, this isn't a multiple choice option that you have to prioritize in life, and it's like having several children all coming to you at the same time, and you can only do one thing. You kind of figure out what that one thing is, and in this case, there's only one person that has a chance of beating President Bush, and that is John Kerry, and it seems to me you have to prioritize all your other political philosophies at this time and saying, I'm going to vote for Kerry because at least with that I can be in the boat. I can help shape how that boat is run. Otherwise, we're just out in the water treading away, and there's nobody going to try to save, pull you into the boat without you climbing in on election day.
You had an interesting idea that you were telling me about what Dennis Kucinich might be able to do using his skill as a ventriloquist.
Well, Barry, you know, I think that one of the problems with us politicians is that we all become too kind of stale as human beings. We all have exciting lives and hobbies and passions, and frankly, there's a lot of very talented members I've met, people who have been had their own bands, who have are professional musicians. Debbie Stabenow, the senator from Illinois, is an incredible, was a professional singer. And I've always suggested, why don't we at the Democratic Party bring the talents of the people that are serving them in Congress to show that they are, real people. They're not just politicians. And one of the unique skills in Congress is Dennis Kucinich, who's a ventriloquist, a very good one, in fact. And I suggested that Dennis use his moment at the National Convention to do his ventriloquist act. He could have a conversation with President Bush or whomever he wanted to have it with. And he's got a good sense of humor and a good style, and I thought putting it together would be a wonderful opportunity to see the nation that we do have some talent and we can use it with humor and still get across our point.
So what do you think he would say? What would be discussed in this conversation?
Dennis has a lot to say. He's been a candidate for president. He's the only one that hasn't dropped out of the race, so he has a lot to say. His main issue is the war. He wants to bring the troops home right now, thinks it was all misgotten and we should have never entered in the first place.
You agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the evidence here pointed out to that. He's been very critical of John Kerry for not wanting to immediately withdraw. I think President Kerry's got to appeal to a greater than just one issue here, and I think has to be an international leader and may not necessarily be able to be in the same position that Dennis is in.
Well, if the United States were to immediately withdraw in Iraq, what would happen?
Well, I don't know the exact. I do think there would be collapse. I guess the analogy that you and I might have is that we have both been Peace Corps volunteers, and we were taught when we went into Peace Corps training that the jobs that we were going to do in our barrios in South America were to work ourselves out of a job. That was don't set it up so when you leave, everything collapses. And so far, it seems to me we have sort of set it up so that if we leave, it does collapse. And people are suggesting we need more time to make sure that it just doesn't collapse.
Do you think that's a proper suggestion?
Well, I think it is, but I don't think we have to do it alone. I think there's an international community, highly skilled, that could be stepping in and taking over. But we'd have to share all of the planning with them, and we'd be having to make sure that the revenues that were derived weren't just go to American companies and all these contracts. I mean, there's a side of it that's very disingenuous to the Iraqi people and to the international community, and it's essentially that these American contractors are over there making boku bucks trying to rebuild Iraq, and while the rest of the world sits around unemployed and not able to get access to this American money, and I don't think that's very fair.
Sam Farr, let's talk again about the election. A lot of people, particularly in California, where it looks like Kerry will win, are asking, what can I do to become meaningfully involved? And you and I have talked about how people can go to swing districts in either congressional districts or swing states. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I have two points there. The first one is that I think that everybody can get involved in a way that is uniquely their own, and that is we just saw in elections in India where 92% of the people voted, and there were just these tear-wrenching scenes of people who were disabled without arms and legs crawling to the polling place to exercise their right to vote. And here we have a country that has such a poor turnout, and in order to increase this voter turnout, instead of lecturing it, I think we ought to just go out and find one person who didn't vote in the last presidential election and make sure they're registered to vote, or if they're registered to vote, make sure they vote and just sort of adopt them and say, I'm going to make sure on election day that you cast your ballot. I'm going to see that you get an absentee ballot and mark it, or that you're going to get to the polling place and I'll drive you, or I'll get a ride for you. I mean, if we just did that, that one individual effort could mean so much for this country. Secondly, there's people with all kinds of energy that say, well, you know, my state's going to win, and my community, all the people I support are going to win. Well, there's people just like them in other states, and certainly states where this whole presidential election comes down to because of the Electoral College. Remember, we set up this system in the United States Constitution, fearing that a few states with a lot of people could dominate American politics, and in order to keep this nation together, we created a more fair system. And, you know, a majority of Americans live in six states. So if those majority of Americans went out and all voted for one candidate, you'd have the president chosen by six states and 44 states saying, we can't stand the president. So that's why the Electoral College was rated to give them more of a fairness. And that's why a lopsided vote in California really doesn't make a difference unless there's lopsided votes in enough other states. So,
well, some of those swing states are Oregon, New Mexico, Ohio, Florida. If someone wants to get involved and go to one of those states in October, how can they connect? How can they get involved?
I think this is the first time in history when we're having a national Get Out the Vote campaign, and then we're looking at swing states. And for those of us in California, our neighboring swing states are Oregon and New Mexico, and figuring out ways in which people who want to give up a couple of days of vacation time to go up to those states or down to those states or to Ohio or some of the others, because they may have friends or relatives there, that you can go and get plugged into a must-win congressional district or a must-win Senate race or a must-win Kerry campaign. And I'm very excited about this. This is a grassroots, nationally organized get-out-the-vote that's saying in states that are safe for Kerry, we can export workers into other states. And it's never been done before like this. And I think people are all excited about it. And
how do people make contact? Who do they call?
It's still in the formative stages, but the Kerry campaign is putting people on just to do this, and that's all they're going to do. The Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, otherwise known as the DCCC, is doing this, and also the Senate campaigns are doing it. And hopefully somewhere people are coordinating between all three so that the volunteers will be used most effectively. I've suggested in my district, which I represent, the University of California at Santa Cruz, that as a university campus that has a pretty progressive young Democrats, that they hook up with other universities and go to those states in New Mexico and Oregon and so on and find like kinds of clubs and university situations where they can go and just come and help those clubs register voters and get out the vote.
As this is being coordinated through the Kerry campaign, you figure shortly after Labor Day, the information will be out and people can make the right connections?
Well, I always find, Barry, that there's never one stop. This is always sort of a work in progress. I'm not sure that they will have it that well organized. I think it's going to be more of a kind of asking where can I go and kind of linking up. The best way to probably do it is with local clubs. I mean, you don't want to just invade a state and not being wanted there, so there has to be some interest in the receiving state to saying, hey, we can't wait for you to arrive to help us do what we want to do. But I'm going to certainly push to see that we can try to get this on websites and get it out there so people will know. I think they can also just contact friends and relatives in those states or, as I said, like kinds of entities of Democratic clubs or student organizations or what have you. Hey, Barry, I feel that there's a real renaissance, a political renaissance going on in America. I think people really realize it is important who you elect to public office. And knowing that, they want a different direction for our country. And they're willing to get back and participate. May not know all the answers, may not be totally enthusiastic about every single personality, but they really want a change of direction, and they realize it won't come unless the people of this country get out and make it happen.
Why do you think that renaissance is occurring now?
Because I think we've just seen a squandering of goodwill in this country. Internationally, this country's lost its respect and high regard around the world because of our president's just told people that he doesn't care about the rest of the world except for trade purposes. But going into Iraq, he just said, we can do this alone. We don't need your help. And then went to the UN after Congress insisted and said, by the way, I'm going to Iraq, and if you'd like to join me, I'd like to have you. Well, you know, that's not the way you respect other nations and treat them that way. I think here at home, it's sort of the squandering of the public assets by giving away these huge tax cuts to very wealthy people. People are earning over $1 million a year. I represent a lot of those people in Pebble Beach and Carmel. They never came and asked me for a tax cut. I mean, this just was a political gimmick, and it's costing over time, it costs us $1.3 trillion in resources that could have gone into education and health care and providing adequate housing for people, essentially the basics that we need to have in society. This squandering and privatization of vouchers and taking away from public schools and giving it to private schools, a privatization of Social Security, making it neither social nor secure, the privatization of Medicare, where you have your own medical account, which is great until your medical account goes bankrupt and you have medical needs. I mean, we're moving away from what we know as the American government and how it should be representing this country, and people are fed up with that, and they want to change, and so they're coming back to the political process, realizing that we've got to get involved. And as I said, if you get involved, you're inside the boat. You can get access to the rudder and steer the rudder. And if you don't like the direction, you're on the inside. You can kick them a lot harder than just treading water on the outside, which is the way I feel a lot of us, even in Congress, are feeling about the political leadership right now in the White House.
Well, Sam Farr, Congressman from Santa Cruz County and Monterey County, thanks for being with us on Radio Curious. And what have you been reading lately?
Well, you would love it, Barry. I'm reading a book called Sarge, The Life and Times of Sergeant Shriver. And, in fact, I'm going to buy you a copy because this just will pull at your heartstrings of why you and I, as young activists in the 60s, decided that we could make the world a better place in which to live by volunteering to spend 2 years in the Peace Corps. And this is about the man who put it all together, and it's a good read.
Congressman Sam Farr, thanks for joining us on Radio Curious.
Thank you, Barry Vogel.
Sam Farr is a member of the House of Representatives from Carmel, California. His district includes Monterey and Santa Cruz counties. The book he recommends is Sarge, The Life and Times of Sergeant Shriver by Scott Strosel. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your comments about our programming, past and future programs. Our address is Radio Curious, Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California, 95482. Our phone is 707-462-6541, and the email is curious@pacific.net. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Curious.